So we get back home. I said, who's back home? He said, you wrote an email and you told her that her writing is powerful. And he said, if I wrote it, I mean it. So that was the stamp of approval. And unfortunately, last time, her sister got married. She couldn't make it. But powerful Becca is here with us tonight. And her powerful short bio reads something like that. Becca Rose Hall directs Frog Hollow School, a writing program for homeschoolers, and writes fiction, essays, and poetry. She recently finished a novel called Salt for Salt. She studied writing and environmental studies at Stanford University and the University of Montana. She lives in Columbia City, on 35th Avenue. With her fiance, their housemate, and their dog, here is powerful Becca Hall.
Well, I'm really excited to be here, and I am really honored to follow that poetry. That was really amazing. I'm going to read to you a little bit from the middle of my novel that I just finished, which is on the brink of going out to publishers. So if you like it, keep your fingers crossed for it. So this novel is set in Seattle in 1926, and the main character, her name's Etta. She's a late 20-year-old white woman who's born here, and she's married to a man from India who she knows as Harvey. But their marriage is not going well. He's disappeared, and she hasn't seen him in a few months. And she's just filed for divorce. And meanwhile, her best friend, Matilda, who's a very, like, kind of prim woman, her husband just got sent to prison for smuggling whiskey down from Canada. So Etta has moved in, without Matilda's knowing. Etta's moved in with Matilda and all of her children. So most of the characters that I haven't named already, those are all the kids. Oh, and Etta's just gone on a really hot date. Anyways, it happened in the evening, past polite hours for calling on anyone. The children were in bed and largely quiet, except for one or two muffled scuffles from the boys' room. Matilda had taken off her shoes and let herself out of her maternity corset and gotten out her mending. I was reworking an old blouse of mine into a frock for Clarabelle and thinking of the night before, of the cookout of Lawrence. The smoke of the cook fire was still in my hair, and the breath of the whale still cooking in my blood, a feeling I could not put into words. When the tap came at the door, I jumped. Oh, Matilda said, scuttling back toward the bedrooms. I'm not dressed for company. Says you, I teased. I went to the door, and I went and opened the door, still laughing. It was Harvey. Harvey leaning on the door jamb, blinking down at me. Harvey on the doorstep, positively fried to the hat. That means drunk. My dearest Henrietta, it is my most profound pleasure, he proclaimed, swaying slightly. When I am in the deprivation of your presence, the sun, he flung his arm in the direction of the street lamp, that brightest of stars, illuminator of the universe, it does not show anything except its darkness in my direction. Harvey, what a surprise. My laugh soured on my face like a lemon juice spasm. Apologies, all my apologies at the egregious hour. He was embarrassing himself, but was too far gone to know it, and so he embarrassed me. Harvey, honey, why don't you come back tomorrow? It's awful late and the children are sleeping. I apologize, I do apologize, only it happens that it happened. It happened, Etta, it has come. He cupped my cheek in his hand, those familiar thin fingers, and looked hazily into my eyes. Oh, Etta, he said, but I know he didn't mean it. He was owled and lonely and babbling, and I knew he would wake up in the morning bitter over this loss of dignity. Bitter makes me cold. I pulled my face away. Why, it's Harvey. How swell, said Matilda behind me. Matilda, my dear, I have been longing so greatly to see you. And Harvey just let himself in through the door. I glared at her and him and in every general direction. It wasn't swell he dropped by. There was nothing swell about it. It was an uncivil invasion of our privacy to call without announcement after so many months. He had sunk down onto Matilda's davenport without so much as removing his hat or jacket. I worried for the furniture. He was dustier than I had ever seen. It is very, very good to see you, Matilda, he was saying. Have you anything to drink? And there, what do you know? She was out in a flash to rummage in John's tool shed. Of course, Wendy will be there. It has been trying to hide alcohol, but unsuccessfully. Returning triumphant with an unmarked bottle, out of which she poured a glass of what we can only presume was gin, she passed it to him with a bright smile. Suddenly, I understood. There was only one right answer to Matilda, the preservation of goddamn marriage. I poured myself a glass of the gin while she couldn't rebuke me. I continued to glare. Henrietta, Harvey said when the drink was installed in his hand, I came to tell you, we must divorce. And with that melodramatic yet unrevelatory pronouncement, he stared deeply into his glass and slumped to the floor. The drink fell loose from his fingers onto Matilda's rug. Oh, piffle, she tutted. Now that's nice. I put my hand in front of his face, still breathing. So I rolled him onto his side and let him be. Do you remember how regal he seemed when I met him? I asked her. Oh, he was a sheik, all right, she agreed over her shoulder as she went to fetch a rag for the carpet. I don't mean to be a prig, but look what a mess the drink has done him. It's not that. It isn't the drinking's fault. Etta, he's a burnt-out drunkard. A wry thought hit me. So you agree I should divorce him? Not at all, she said. What Harvey needs is cold water and a firm hand, as much Jesus as will stick to his Hindu hide. He needs, she glared, a wife. We left Harvey there for the night, covered with a quilt. The children found him in the morning, to his deep embarrassment. He folded the quilt precisely and laid it on the back of the davenport. I could hear him splashing water on his face in the bathroom for a long time. He came out ashen-faced, but with his hair slipped back and his collar creased precise. That man did not need a wife. Coffee, I offered from the stove. We don't have tea. He accepted. I am very sorry about all of this. I poured out enough oatmeal from the tin for all of us and put the pot under the faucet. Look, said Harvey over the noise of the sink. Clearly I ought to have waited until a more cogent moment. Everything I said, however, is true. We must begin the process of divorce immediately. I lugged the pot to the stove and struck a match for the burner. The gas took with a whoosh. I shook the match out and tossed it in the garbage can. I sighed. Harvey, I've been waiting for you to come back so we can do just that. We approached the court today. I turned and leaned my back against the counter. I crossed my arms and glared. Look, mister, I have a lot of things to do today. I support myself now, in case you haven't heard, and I'm trying to hold this household together. You've been gone for months now without a word, and you want to waltz in and say this has to happen today? Come back next week. My day off is Tuesday. I tucked my hair behind my ear. I hadn't said anything so satisfying in a month. Harvey was watching me, a strange look on his face. Etta, it seems you do not understand. Something has happened. I received a letter. They are taking my citizenship. I didn't mention this, but he's become a U.S. citizen. I sank down onto the other kitchen chair. I must report to the courts next Thursday. Will they send you back to India? I'm not sure. I certainly hope not. What I do know is that I will be stateless. Britain won't give you back your citizenship. No. But why now? The ruling was 3 or 4 years ago. I was speaking of a Supreme Court case, U.S. versus Thind, which we had all followed with great interest. The scientific consensus, based on the reach of the Indo-European language group and on historic migrations, was that at least high-caste Indians were of Caucasian descent. Up until the ruling, Caucasian and white had been considered synonymous. Harvey and all of his compatriots had framed their citizenship cases around this, as one had to either be a free white person or of African descent to obtain citizenship in our beacon of justice. That is why they could become citizens, while the Chinese and Japanese immigrants could not. An injustice the Indian citizenship cases did not alleviate, and perhaps even enforced. Then the Thind case had ruled that although some Indians were Caucasians, they were not white, because the average man on the street would not see them as white. The court had privileged ignorance over science. Even Indians who had gotten citizenship could have it revoked. If nothing else, the bigotry was thorough. Harvey smiled a weary smile. They are going through us one by one. It takes time. They are quite methodical. A red heat had come into my head. They can't just do this. It's unjust and small-minded and backwards, I sputtered. Etta, liberty and justice for all. Ha! Our country is such moth-eaten ideals. Etta, he put his hand on my arm. It is worse than that. They will take yours away, too. I looked at him. He rushed on. I'm very, very sorry to have brought this upon you. I don't understand. I'm a born citizen in my own right. I can vote. I don't see why my husband's... I cannot explain it to make it right, he said, his voice gentle. Well, I never bet on this when I married you. So it is very lucky you want a divorce already, I suppose, Harvey said then. If you loved me, you would be left with a very difficult choice. His words stabbed me. If I loved you, what makes you think I don't? He arched his eyebrows. Darling, you petitioned me for a divorce. I read it in the paper upon my return. That is hardly a profession of love. The oatmeal had burned to the pan, and the children were crowding into the kitchen. Blackened layer notwithstanding, I doled them into bowls. It's smoky. That makes it special, I told the dubious recipients. Take it to the dining room and get the milk off the porch, somebody. But Auntie Etta, it's burned, whined Lilian. It's good for you like that. Peter Rabbit always ate his oats like that, I lied, and pushed her toward the table. Peter Rabbit never eat oatmeal. He drank stupid chamomile tea, she corrected. Well, if he did eat oats, he would have eaten them burnt. Now get. I went back to the stove and started a new pot of oats for Harvey, Matilda, and myself. More coffee, I asked Harvey. I'd never seen him drink anything hot except tea, but there he was, taking a second cup. I could only imagine the state of his head. Thank you, he said, and then the silence just hung there. The stove purred, and he sipped his coffee, and in the other room, the children were shrieking. It was Matilda. Eat your oatmeal, Clarabelle, Pearl was saying. But it's in my hair! Don't matter, you eat your breakfast or you don't leave the table. Rules is rules. Rules is rules, said Lillian, like some bellowing echo. If you don't eat it, the mice will. Tonight while you're sleeping, said John Jr. There was more shrieking. I closed the kitchen door. Look, I said to Harvey, I just want my life to mean something. How lofty, he said wearily. Anyway, it does not matter what you want. I'm divorcing you. I stopped, wooden spoon in my hand. Hold on one moment. You're divorcing me? What right do you have? You're the one who abandoned me. You're the one who is cold. I was waving the spoon, flinging globs of oatmeal onto the floor. I chased them down with a furious scrub of a rag. You know what? I won't sign. Blotchy patches had come out all over my chest. I could see them through the V of my house dress. My hands were fists, and I wanted to use them. Harvey at the kitchen table had his head in his hands. You are a terribly difficult woman, he told me. Well, I said, flustered, I can't go today. I have a job. Tuesday, then, he said flatly. He stood and picked up his hat. Wait, I said, there's breakfast. I will take my meal in a cafe. Good morning, Etta. And out he went, leaving me to fizzle like a pricked balloon. Thank you.